to Spark Your Fire podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
See, if you're always winning and you don't really understand what it is to win, you got to take those losses. You got to take those hits. There's got to be the valleys, the peaks, the ups, the downs. In order for you to, when it does happen, you go, wow, qué rico. You know, this is what it's all about. And not only that, it's never about making it, guys. It's always about maintaining it. That's the toughest part.
G'day, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Friday Wrap. Spark Your Fire here. It's another week again. I mean, every Friday, we all look forward to this having this chat. And there's never short of news or content, I think, in the current environment. I mean, even when I look at it, sometimes, you know, the news gets released on Monday, and when we get to Friday, it's already felt like it was a long time ago. That's how quickly things are changing at the moment. It's amazing speed right now in terms of how media is spreading the words, et cetera, et cetera. And that is a good segue into one of our key topics earlier today. But before, I don't want to jump ahead too much without having two of my co-hosts today with me today. We've got Jazz and John here, as always. Lovely to have you guys here, gentlemen, as always.
I was dying to see your face, guys. I've been missing Friday. Good to be back.
You're back on Earth now, basically, Bahamas.
That's it. I'm in Bahamas partying.
it's worth letting all the audiences know that the gold rush that Jazz was doing in outer space is now over officially.
I found so much gold that I'm like, there's enough money now. We can just go and party in Bahamas for the
That's
rest.
Right.
Of
Yeah. Gotta see John's expression when he says he's got enough money, mate. When he talks about Bitcoin, right?
Stop mining the gold, mate. Good to be back, gentlemen. Can't believe Friday already.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, John, it's good to have you back on as well. As you mentioned before jumping on the show, you've put the brown paper bag on top of your head, try to save all the best contents for our listeners. I'm sure all our listeners at the moment are getting geared up and say, what's John got this week coming up for us? Hey, what new ideas? So,
Yeah. Two reasons for the paper bag on my head. One is so that I don't use all the good content, just wasting it on my family. I save it up for you guys.
Mate, you know, that's why we always said John said it first here on Spark Your Fire, right? One of the best segments, I'm sure, and clearly you can tell from the downloads, the number of downloads that we have over the last couple of weeks and months. But gentlemen, circling back to what I initially started off with the amount of changes that's currently ongoing in the market, you know, the news, the number of contents that's been pushed out by journalism, by media, you know, et cetera, it's mind-blogging, I have to say. Like, you know, you look at, when I look at Monday's news, like I said, for example, the CBA property growth forecast prediction that we were about to cover later on, that was published on Monday. And now Friday, I look at it and I felt like that was over like a week or 2 weeks ago now for some reason. You know, just the amount of information that we try to squeeze into our head at the moment is absolutely amazing and crazy. I don't know how everyone keeps it up. But that does bring a very good topics of discussion, which is also on the major news headline this week, in terms of, you know, Australian governments obviously try to regulate and legislate that Facebook and Google and any other external institutions, social media institutions, will now have to actually pay in order to be able for users to share contents or be able to search for contents or news media contents. I should be more clear on that. So, you know, I think that's one of the key topics this week, which we probably should start off with, because I'm sure both gentlemen have got a lot of things to say, a lot of voices to add in here. So to be honest, Jazz and I are probably not the closest one to this topic. So John, perhaps if you can give us a bit of background, I think you've done a bit of research on this and you read it up. Could you just give us like a 2 minute summary of, for our listeners, just a bit more detail on what that is?
Absolutely. So this is actually a topic that the whole world is watching. A lot of governments around the world are looking to, you know, the impact that big tech have on the way we consume news. So the Australian government came out and tried to propose a law that required tech companies to pay publishers when their articles are to be posted by users on Facebook. And in response to that, Facebook said, okay, we're out. We're not sharing any news on Facebook platforms in Australia. In fact, to quote Mark Zuckerberg, he said, the proposed law has left us facing a stark choice: attempt to comply with a law that ignores the realities of this relationship, or stop allowing news content on our services in Australia. And obviously chose to stop allowing news content on their services. In response to that, Scott Morrison said, quote, Facebook's actions to unfriend Australia Today were as arrogant as they were disappointing. So Facebook is how most people get their news, I think, in Australia. Certainly, it's certainly a popular way to get news. And it's also the way Australians get public service broadcasts about whether to wear masks around COVID or stay inside because there's a bushfire, anything like that. Australia represents about 2% of Facebook's global revenue. So we're not a big market, but a lot of governments are looking at their response to this, and they've cut the cord in terms of news. So that's the background. I guess my take on it is that it shows two things. So I've got two takes on this. The first thing is that it shows that Facebook is not just a platform; they're a curator of information. That they're choosing what knowledge, what information we get, and they kind of always were. That they're powerful enough to select the information we get. And so people who are following things over the last couple of years, from election results to all sorts of stuff, know that there is a big tech filter through which we're getting our information. So they're a curator, not just a platform. I think that's the first thing, but I think we kind of already knew that. The second thing is, and this is where I have a little bit of sympathy for Facebook, what's the government doing negotiating on behalf of media companies to make them pay for journalism? My view is that let News Corp negotiate with Facebook if they want to get paid for their content. We know that Google during the week reached an agreement with News Corp to do some profit sharing. Why can't Facebook do that? So I don't even know why the government's involved in this. I might be naive and I might be missing something, but I think government should have just let Rupert Murdoch negotiate his own profit sharing arrangement with Facebook.
Do they go down to the specific level of does the government actually interfere to the specific level of how much, or like whether you should pay and how much of that? I don't think they do, right? I think that the idea is for government to say, look, I'm laying the path for you guys to basically start negotiating, come up with an agreement on a contract, and move on from there. Is that the right understanding, John?
Yes, I believe so.
Right. Okay. Jace, what thoughts do you have on this?
I'm surprised. I think Facebook has done the right thing, to be honest. And I agree with John. As the politicians got to do with this, it should be the news companies who should be directly in talks with likes of Facebook and other social platforms when it comes to sharing of the media. But here's the interesting one, which maybe I'm missing the point, maybe I'm not, so I'm not sure. But if the user of the platform, which is Facebook in this case, is sharing a piece of news, then there's two things. One, they're posting a link to the website, which anyways is helping promote the brand, the media brand, not Facebook itself. Facebook is just a platform for the users, right? So if they have got a subscription paid platform, whether it's Haraldson or Age, whatever it is, then it's in favor of the media companies anyways, right? So I'm missing the point over here. Two is, How often do we see users actually copy-pasting the content of these media websites that are paid services, whether Haraldson, The Age, AFR, and posting it on their profile, on their wall, Facebook wall? Never happens, right? So it's normally a link that will get shared. And if it's a link that is being shared, then it's actually in favor of these media giants, because you have to click on the link to read. And if it's a paid service, that means you don't need to become a member. So what is the exact issue here? Because I haven't digged the news that deep, but it sounds like Facebook is clearly right in this case to me.
You're saying if they link an article to The Australian and The Australian has a paywall, then they're going to get blocked by The Australian paywall.
Correct. Like AFR. If I post an AFR link right now on my profile wall, right, even if you click on that link, you can't read the news. you'll still have to pay for the service. But in fact, what ended up happening is 10 more people know about AFR now because they just saw that link with a headline and they probably are keen to read about if the content is of interest to them, they're keen to read about it, which means they'll probably end up out of 10, one will end up getting a service. So it's a great marketing way. And it I have rarely seen people copy-pasting the content from any of these media websites and posting on their wall because that will be a stupidly long content. And I don't think very many people will prefer reading that anyways.
Yeah, social media is not designed that way to you know, not for that purpose, really.
Exactly. So why are politicians bitching about it? Maybe there's some piece of information that I'm missing, if John wants to clarify. But my thoughts are what Facebook has done is it makes perfect sense in my opinion.
I tend to agree with you there, Jez. I actually think it's more of a marketing, you know, like your you know, it's kind of like the social media is what everyone uses now. It's the new TV that everyone is watching at the moment. And, you know, the fact that if someone posts, someone shares an information there, then, and like you rightly said that, Jazz, basically it's usually a link. It's not the actual content that people copy and paste and put it on whatever their tweet or whatever their post. And that creates visibility and eyeball for people to actually jump into this specific website or the actual media company or the publisher or whatever to actually view the content, right? So I too with you. I'm a bit confused in terms of what the back intention of the government is trying to achieve here. Whether there's being, you know, whether the media company has actually kind of said, hey, you know, to or maybe they approach government and say, hey, we actually need a bit of help here. I don't know whether there's something that's been happening in the background to say, you know, hey, we are struggling and we need government to step in to help us a little bit here. I don't know. I'm making a stab in the dark.
Or there is the other thing, which is platforms like Zero Hedge, which is a news channel again, are becoming more popular on these platforms, which means likes of AFR, Age, and all these are losing some business, right? Mm. So, because AFR is what Financial Review, right? And Financial Review, if you truly want to understand what's happening in the financial world, I would rather jump on the Twitter and rather than getting an AFR membership, right?
It's a lot faster as well.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Unless it's causing them to lose business in an indirect way, maybe that's one reason that it's helping promote small media companies who are giving true information.
I think you've nailed it. I think you both have. Like this is legacy media with a dying business model lashing out. And it's not just that, it's that they don't have the power to take on big tech anymore by themselves. They need the government to essentially front run their business model. Mm-hmm. So
I think you're right, John. It's just their dying business model, their legacy business models. They're dying, but they still obviously have enough money to have some influence, which is what's happening over here.
So why does government have a dog in the fight, though? That's what I can't understand.
Some direct or indirect benefits to be had.
Vested interest, vested you
interest. Yeah, some kind of vested interest. Probably
tax revenues too. So if all the revenues going into, you know, Facebook's revenue is going into the United States tax treasuries, they're probably thinking, well, how do we tax that?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like we're defending big tech. I mean, if anyone's listened to this podcast for a while, we certainly don't. We don't do that normally. We're usually highly cynical and skeptical of the big tech companies, but in this instance, we're also highly skeptical of government policies as well.
I think it's a bit of a both sides, to be honest. Yeah. I don't think we know. I mean, Jazz and I probably don't know enough in terms of the underlying intentions behind it. That's why it's difficult for us to comment. And this is an investor podcast, so I'm trying to link what is any investment aspects to it. What does that mean to how people would consume information, and, you know, like how would that impact their investment decisions to a degree?
I mean, information is everything, David. When you make any investment decisions, you make based on the information at hand, right? So if the information is being controlled or being manipulated in any shape or form, that's worrisome. So if users or the investors can't get the right information, then that's a big deal. And these days, the best way to find information is through these social media platforms, whether it's Insta, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, right? So, if Facebook decides to completely disappear from this space altogether, then all the users sitting over there trying to find the information on a daily basis may not find legit information that much anymore. It will all be garbage all of a sudden.
For us, they'll pull out, basically, or they'll reduce the use of Facebook to that extent and instead move on to other social media platforms, such as Google, who's willing to pay for that kind of services and use that instead, right? So,
Well, I don't think there's an investment thesis until a US or a European government tries to do it. I think we're too small, but I think, you know, like all small mature markets, we're a test case and people are watching us closely. I don't think that the US government, with a Congress led by the Democrats, would try it because Silicon Valley tend to be very pro-Democrat, so I don't think that they would try to reign in Silicon Valley in the next couple of years. So I don't think there's much to this from an investment perspective. I think the story is probably more curation of curation of
data, information. All right. Okay, well, let's keep a close eye out to see how this unfolds, I guess. All right, moving on to next topic. One of our most exciting ones, CBA has made a property growth forecast of what is about 16% for the next 2 years, right? So I know that everybody loves a good story. This is the type of story that will make all investors smile to a degree, given the fact that it's heating up everywhere at the moment. But I guess the question for you guys is, I know we kind of all on the ground at the moment, watching closely on our markets. Do you guys agree with looking at probably about 16% for the next 2 years, or is that too low or is that too high? What are your thoughts?
I think those numbers are very conservative. And this is what we were discussing before the recording as well. Provided COVID doesn't throw any more curveballs and we don't see crazy lockdowns like last time, which affects the businesses and all. But even then, the numbers are looking very conservative. I would have thought by end of 2022-23, we'll be more somewhere north of 30%, closer to 50, to be honest.
So even more bullish, basically, 50%.
I am very bullish for the next coming 3 years. So I think the run will last somewhere till mid of 2023 before it slows down completely.
After that. So 50% up to 2023? Do you reckon 40, 50, or is that per year?
No. Total, it will be somewhere between 30 to 50%.
Yeah, wow. Okay. John, what do you reckon?
I agree with that. I mean, the story here is that Commonwealth Bank and all the big four are Johnny come latelys to the bull market story. So when in 2020, when COVID hit, they were, and I'm making the numbers up a little bit now, but they were saying, oh, you know, property will go down by 30%, and then they revised it, and maybe it'll go down by 5%, and then it'll go down by 2%. And then they, you know, after it was extremely clear that the market was going up, then they said, actually, maybe prices will go up in 2021. And so they are laggards. So I agree with everything that Jazz said about 16% over 2 years being too conservative. The devil's in the detail, because if you're talking about the Australian property market, there's a lot of markets within that, and there's units and houses and all that sort of stuff. But I think generally speaking, for the average punter, that'll be too low. So I think that we'll do more like 10 or 12% per year. So I agree, end of 23, 30 to 50%. Here's where I differ from Jazz, though. I think that the kind of quote-unquote boom that we've had so far has been based almost entirely on low interest rates, but we've also had no investors in the market and no immigration. What I think will happen is that the unexpected aspect of this boom is that 2024 and 2025 are going to be huge, and maybe even bigger, because we haven't had the investors yet. You bring the investors back, you bring migrants, and you start pushing rents up. This thing's going to run a lot further and a lot longer than people think. So this is running into 2025, I think. But I actually think that 2024 and 2025 will be bigger than the next few years.
Interesting. So you're saying run will last 5 years.
It's going to last 5 years. There's a couple of reasons for that. there's some cycle charts that I've done, and you can find that on YouTube. But the last 2 years of a bull market are what they call the winner's curse. It's when property goes vertical. But the last 2 years, I believe, is 2024 and 2025. And look, there's nothing stupider than trying to forecast this stuff, because it will inevitably be wrong. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll just have more legs than people think.
Because again, assumptions, I guess, as well, yeah, right? Because the interest rate will have to remain as low at that point in time as well for investors to continue to jump in. And we don't know at this point in time whether they will start to come back up after 3 years or 4 years. Yeah. I mean, at least till foreseeable future up to 2023, we're probably going to be in a low rate environment, that's for sure, and continue to do so. But as soon as as soon as they adjust cash rate and banks started to tweak even just a 0.25% or very small percentage, it's going to change the sentiment quite a bit, because that's an indication, basically, to say, hey, our economy is actually starting to do well, and interest rates are only going to start going up. And I think from memory, if I'm not mistaken, before, I think around 2017 was around the time when that kind of message, you know, we were essentially at the crossroads at that point in time. People were saying interest rate probably going to go climb up. But of course, from, you know, what we're seeing now, that's continued to go down since then. But that certainly has impacted sentiment at that point in time. So I don't know whether, I mean, that, I think that's one of the assumptions that we probably have to put in, to say, you know, there's no major changes and you know, at least nothing from the cash rate or too much from the bank interest rate perspective for that assumption to be true. What do you reckon, John? Do you think you agree with me?
I do agree with you. There are certain assumptions, and one of the biggest assumptions, that borders open up again, mm-hmm. and interest rates stay low. Now, in a sense, interest rates have to stay low for two reasons. One is that they're trying to inflate the debt away. So they need asset prices to go up so that the debt is proportionately smaller. Mm. And if they don't inflate the debt, most governments in the world, East and West, are bankrupt. Right? So interest rates need to stay low, not for you or me as property investors, but for governments who can't make their interest repayments. The other reason is that it's just kind of a stated policy objective that they're trying to let inflation run over their target to get the economy going in their mind. So they will leave interest rates lower for longer than any of us think. And they've kind of told us this. It shouldn't surprise us, but I think it will surprise even us, I guess.
All right. Yeah. I think so. From a longer term perspective, you believe it's going to go. Would the low interest rate be what going on up to 5 to 10 years type of horizon, or what do you reckon from an economic perspective? How long would it take for RBA to be able to make a rational decision to go, right, it is actually now time to actually start putting up the cash rate again, because we do need to have some ammunition moving forward, and the Australian people are financially in a decent shape, so that, you know, by raising interest rate, it's not going to hurt the families in terms of income, in terms of their spending, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you think that time frame, in terms of when do you expect the first rate rise will be, in your opinion?
2024. Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think, Jazz?
I'll still stick to 2023 mid-ish.
Okay.
I think if the rates, that doesn't mean the rate has to rise in 2023, but RBA will come out and start putting pressure one way or the other, whether it's through rates or through assessment rates or through job warning, however they do it, that whole game will start towards mid-2023. I think 2024, so I'm still gonna stick to 2023. 2022 and 2023 is where the cycle will end, but we'll see what happens.
What do you think, David?
Yeah, look, I reckon around 23, 24, around that period as well-ish. But, you know, I have a feeling that if they do want to control house prices, they will do it through, like what we said before, the APRA, through different prudential type of lending restrictions, right? So as soon as they curb lending or make some tweaks to it, the party will be slowed down. In that sense, and the prices will start to get control. And that could be a lot earlier than 2023 or 2024. So interest rate could still be low, but they could do these small tweaks in terms of, like, you know, maybe controlling investor or maybe controlling a bit of our first home buyer or an upgrader, you know, from a servicing calculator perspective, where they would allow people not to be able to borrow as much as they could before. But all of a sudden, people, say, for example, you currently can actually lend up to 2 mil, can only lend up to 1.5. So that's going to put a big break in terms of the property price growth that we are expecting to see moving forward. So,
yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. I think that they prefer to regulate lending rather than put interest rates up.
Putting interest rates, yeah.
But the tricky thing is going to be that if we go into a commodity market boom and Australian exports boom, that's going to put a lot of upward pressure on the dollar, which they don't want. So one of the ways to counter a rising Australian dollar because of the commodities is to lower interest rates. And they're going to be kind of caught where do you lower interest rates to keep the dollar down, but then you risk, you know, putting fuel on a property market fire by lowering interest rates, or do you let the dollar run up?
How do you lower the interest rate? There's no room for interest rates to be lowered.
That's right. I mean, there are ways. I mean, in Europe, in Japan, they've found a way to go to negative. So they could, but the Aussie dollar is likely to get stronger if there's a commodity boom.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of stuck. We're stuck in a rock between a hard place. I guess all it means is there will be a lot of inflation over the next couple of years. They're going to try to keep a lid on the dollar while commodity prices are going up. It's going to be very interesting.
And that's why they're currently doing QE and still doing QE at the moment, isn't it? Because there's really no more rate triggers that they can pull. So the only way when all the other countries are doing is printing money, then Australia will also have to follow.
Yeah, we don't need as much stimulus as Europe and North America. And we're stuck in a US dollar paradigm where we need to stimulate to maintain parity to the global reserve currency. But we actually don't need that much stimulus. Mm. Most of Australia's opened up again. We've got rising export prices. We actually don't need interest rates as low as they are. But because we're global players, we need to lower our rates as well. So Australia's in a trickier position than a lot of other countries.
Yeah, I agree on that. Maybe it will be more of a direct intervention by RBA by the politicians to control the rate, the currency, however they do it, but rather than letting the interest rates go into negative. I'll be surprised if interest rates go negative that quickly. They will go negative, but not that quickly. I think we'll watch a lot of other countries before doing it.
So your bet is currently on that RBA will, at some point in time, gonna drop the rates down to zero or into negative territory, yes?
No, what I'm saying is it's actually going to, they will hold on to the rates, but they will do a direct
intervention. Ah, okay, direct intervention. Yeah.
Into the currency markets is what I'm saying.
Cool.
How they do it, I don't know, but it will be a direct intervention, like China and other countries do. So.
Mm. Cool. Yeah, no, that's certainly an interesting topic to watch. And I guess, with the current stimulus that's flowing around, with Australia being much better than rest of the world right now, we're seeing the property prices just shoot up like there's no tomorrow. There's a lot of FOMO. There's a shortage of stock across all of Australia to a degree. I think at the moment, all markets are very bullish. I don't think any of the market at the moment is bearish. Am I correct in that in saying that, gents?
I am actually surprised how bullish it has been just right at the start of the year. And pick any. And I think main reason is the liquidity that was pumped into the market late last year, start of this year kind of thing, has really flown through into the economy and all the stimulus checks and everything, all of that stuff. It's just, I'm amazed. I'm honestly amazed with what's going on in the markets. Doesn't matter which market you pick.
John, what are your thoughts?
Muted.
I did it again. There's a real disconnect between the markets and the real economy at the moment. I mean, that's one of the kind of the big stories. The stock market, another all-time high this week. But another couple of 100,000 Americans received, joined the unemployment queues for the first time.
Mm.
This is all kind of the road to bad things. I'm not exactly sure what it looks like, but our markets don't match our economy, and it's pretty unhealthy. It's pretty unhealthy what's going on at the moment. There are a couple of clues to see what your economy is really doing. And I don't think the stock market or the housing market are the right places to look. I think that places to look are which we've discussed, the 10-year yield, the oil price, the gold price. If you want to know if your economy's in sick shape or healthy shape, they're the three indicators.
So that's something that, John, we should really touch on next week. I think that should be our topic for next week.
Yeah, that'd be a good one to cut in. So yeah,
I think that one is going to take us. I think we should go deeper into that one. That's a very important one, in my opinion.
Cool. Well, we'll definitely jump into that one next week then, given the time constraint that we have for this episode. But John, I guess on that basis, could you give us a bit of clearance rate update across the nation?
Yeah, so it's been, I mean, I'm sounding a bit repetitive now, but the
broken record.
Clearance rates are really booming at the moment. If I go a run through some of the key cities, we've got Sydney. Remember last week we talked about a record since 2005, the highest preliminary clearance rates, and that was at 88.7. Well, the clearance rates for Sydney last weekend were 89.1, so they were even higher. But there were about 20% more houses for sale, about 25% more.
What was the total listing
there? Total listings was 551 auctions, compared to 400 the week before.
Wow.
And a higher clearance rate.
Really sizzling.
Now, Melbourne's starting to pop. Their clearance rate dropped from 82% to 80%, but they had nearly 700 auctions, so that was much higher. Brisbane again, smaller market, but 72.5 was the clearance rate there, which was up from 69%. And Adelaide, boom, nearly 93% clearance rates compared to 90% the week before. And these are all much higher than the prior year as well. Canberra at 86% compared to 72% the week before. Boom time, guys. Boom time. If I look at houses versus units, you know, house price clearance rates are over 90%. Unit clearance rates are high 80s. So they're lower. And this is still a house boom, but the units are still in what you would consider a bull market at about 84%. So everything is pointing to much higher prices. Stock is very tight. There's an old saying that the cure to low prices is low prices. So the cure for high prices is high prices. So if prices are high, that will bring more stock onto the market and that will push prices down. Hopefully that's what happens and people can have a greater choice of more properties. But at the moment, it's very hot. And, you know, the other interesting thing is that it's a very macro-heavy environment at the moment, which is to say that all markets are going up. See, real estate's a very local asset. You know, usually in most markets, you have like Sydney moving up and Adelaide's moving down or Melbourne's going up or Brisbane's going down or something like that. We're in a situation where everything is moving up. And it's not just every capital city, it's all the regional areas are going up. It's other asset classes like the Dow Jones and Bitcoin. And this is what people have described as an everything bubble. And it's a very macro heavy investing environment at the moment. So you don't need to get in with the scalpel. Anything you buy will tend to go up at the moment. And that is not advice. That's just inflation.
I like your last disclaimer, John, because I was just about to say, does that mean, you know, throw a dart in Sydney, a suburb, and then just choose one and you'll make money?
It works until it doesn't, right? So this probably doesn't end well. So we all have to be mindful of that. But it's highly inflationary. Yeah, we
do. Do you think we're currently in the bubble zone? And it could burst at any time between the next, next few years.
I think that with interest rates at zero, there will be flash crashes in almost every asset class. So I think the stock market will have a crash this year and recover in the same year. I think real estate will have time. I don't think imminently, but I think real estate will have little crashes here and there.
Mm.
So I think that when you have the sort of disorienting policy settings like these, where you've got, it's entirely stimulus based, where, you know, there's checks going out, interest rates coming down, that the economy's kind of orienting itself around that stimulus, and there will be flash crashes. I think that the asset markets will run higher for years, though, with lots of flash crashes in the meantime.
Mm. So you're talking about like a mini crash, and then it will recover itself again, a bit like what we had last year with stock market, where, you know, the initial COVID dropped, what, 40%, mm-hmm. and recovered to the same point, what, within like till the end of the year or something like that.
Something like that. I think that the Dow will drop 15-20% and still end the year higher.
Mm.
Something.
Jazz, what do you think? We in a bubble territory at the moment?
Nope. Because it's going to get real bubbly from here.
Even more bubbly.
So this will look like how to explain it? If you were looking at a graph, put it this way, it will become a hockey stick, essentially. So it's already bubbly. It's already, we when you speak to the real estate agents, when you look at the open houses and all that stuff, we have talked the numbers last time as well, and John just mentioned the auction clearance rates, all of that stuff. You go to an open house, there's 100 people, but that is just the start of the hockey stick, the bottom. I think the real sharp growth we're going to see, like what we discussed before, 2023 kind of thing, is. So it looks bubbly, but when you start looking at it from a different lens, I guess the bigger question again, and we have discussed this in the past, is what is your unit of measure? Everything is defined based on the unit of measure. If your unit of measure is gold, or for argument's sake, Bitcoin, it's not.
Mm, that's right.
Everything is crashing against that, right? So how do you, we really need to define the unit of measure when we start talking about bubbly things. Otherwise, these kind of bubbles, in fiat world, everything is a bubble. Yep. Simple as that.
Because you can print as much as you like, in that sense, and inflate as much as you like.
And that's why we are seeing gold, silver, Bitcoin, all the other, and you name it, property, everything's going up. Now, all of a sudden, you change the lens to gold. No, it's not really that bubbly, right? If you make that as a unit of measure. Now, change it for a second to Bitcoin. It's not bubbly at all. So what's the unit of measure? It's that simple. So but for listeners, from a listener's perspective, I think it is not bubbly. It's measuring it in fiat terms or USD, Australian dollar terms. I think it will... we're just at the start of something big.
Oh, I love your last point that it depends what you're measuring our value in, and gold and Bitcoin. But one way to, because what's happening is that the currencies are declining, the currencies are crashing. One way to put it that's a little bit cheeky is to say that the dollar priced in housing is crashing.
Mm-hmm.
The dollar priced in housing is crashing, or the dollar priced in gold, or the dollar priced in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening, because houses aren't changing, but the dollars are changing.
Yes.
Spot on. So, when you start looking at some of these charts and compare it, I don't have one to compare it in housing terms, but if you compare it in the gold terms, let's say S&P 500 in gold terms, it's going down. It's not going up. It's going down. And when you look at the same chart of S&P 500 in Bitcoin terms, it's totally crashing. It's completely crashing. And I'm happy to post some of these charts on the Facebook page. Business can have a look at it. But it all comes down to how we measure things. And hence, we are only at the start of this so-called bubble, because with the amount of currency that has been printed and is yet to be printed in the next few years, the game is only just getting started.
Well, one of the best things you ever showed me, Jazz, was you showed me a chart of GDP measured in gold. And it means that, yeah, like it was fascinating. It means that in terms of real money or gold,
that's real money, yeah.
Our standard of living peaked in the 70s, and we've been declining ever since. And that's interesting stuff.
And tell that from anything you try and touch these days, and we talked about this a week or two ago, even the price of a coffee cup has gone up by 20 cents. Yeah, only sounds like only 20 cents. But now if you add that, when you go to a supermarket for grocery shopping, add 20 cents on every item, and then on your fuel, every liter kind of thing, it's all changes. So we're getting started. Party's getting started. For the people who are holding any kind of assets, I think we'll come out as winners in this game.
Oh, no, really good perspectives, gents. And I know, Jazz, I know you're eagerly wanting to jump onto your Bitcoin, and it got some key news this week, has surpassed the 50K mark, isn't it?
Yes. So
get our listeners up on that.
The 50K mark was a big hurdle. It's, well, put it this way, not 50K, exactly 53K kind of thing.
53?
That's where roughly, approximately around that price mark is where Bitcoin hits $1 trillion market cap. So that's where the it really becomes interesting to all these big hedge funds like of Ray Dalio, Warren Buffett, and all these people, right? Because now it's at a point where it's not a small player in the game, which is before 20 billion, 100 billion market cap. Now we are talking is in trillions. And if it doubles from here, you all of a sudden are surpassing the market cap of silver as well. So you are past 1.5 trillion now. So I think it's a major milestone for Bitcoin in my opinion. The other thing was the big piece of news that came out was BlackRock CIO was in the news late this week talking about how they have started to dabble into the Bitcoin space. Now, BlackRock dabbling into the Bitcoin space, basically, just for the listeners, what that means is they look after retail investors and some of the small office funds. And the funds that they're managing currently are in a tune of 7 trillion, not billion, 7 trillion. So when they say double, you can understand what that double means in this case. Even if it's 1%, that's a lot of dabbling over here that they're doing.
So, a lot of zeros.
There's a lot of zeros over there. And Bitcoin is the hardest supply asset on this planet. In fact, on any planet. Gold is everywhere. You can go and mine it in the asteroids if you want to. John, sorry for that. But this is the hardest asset that has ever been in the history of mankind. So likes of BlackRock, dabbling with few zeros at the end, you can take a guess of where the price will go from here. Getting from 10 to 50K was a dream for the investors who are in this space. But getting from 50 to 100K, it's nothing. It's just double. So space to be watched. It's like I said before, the party is only getting started.
I like how you frame it, Jazz. How long do you reckon it will take Bitcoin to hit 100K?
I think it will be somewhere between 80 to 100K by end of April.
By end of April? Okay. So mm-hmm. a few more episodes and then we'll be able to validate that, I guess.
We will.
It does seem to be bouncing against some resistance at 50,000 though, right?
It has passed that resistance. It's already done its first or second daily close above 50 now. That's a good start, I'll say. That doesn't mean it can't go down, just to be clear. It can definitely go down from here and it can go down super fast. And it won't surprise if it goes down. But the point is, it's hit a major milestone of a trillion, or it's about to hit a major milestone of $1 trillion market cap very soon.
But I look at this chart, though, it's parabolic. And I'm one of these regretful, bitter guys who never got in. So I'd love to see it crash just so I feel a little bit less silly about all of this. But so my motivations aren't entirely pure, but like if I look at the chart, it looks like 2017 when it went vertical up to 20,000, obviously bigger scale. And I know you're saying that, yeah, of course it could pull back. It could pull back big, but it's still on a...
The trend is still up.
Yeah.
Even if it goes from here to 20K, the trend is still up, not down.
Mm.
And that's the big deal.
In a normal market, it would... When I say normal market, I mean a more established market. It would need to mature, like find some support here, and then it forms a base, and then it does that for 6 months, and then it goes up. But Bitcoin's just a whole new beast, isn't it?
Yeah, so this one trades a little bit differently. It's a network effect thing, right? So the more the people own it, the more the people want to own it. It's kind of thing. It's Facebook. Think of it as a Facebook, right? But a monetary open source network in this case, which is Bitcoin. But once 10 users join on Facebook, getting to 100 was easy. Once 100 join on Facebook, getting to 1,000 was easy. From 1,000 getting to 100K is super easy. It's the first 1,000 that are hard, right? So that's the same thing with this monetary network. It's got to a point where it's $1 trillion market cap almost. Last I checked it was about 976 billion. So let's just call it trillion for the argument's sake. Getting from trillion to 10 trillion, it sounds a lot, but it's actually easier to get to 10 trillion from here than it was to get to a trillion. Because trillion was trying to prove itself that it's here to stay. It's like a Lindy effect. The longer you're alive, the longer you will stay alive, right? So getting to trillion was hard. Getting to 10 trillion is super easy. And I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow. My point is that it has cemented itself in the world of assets.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Still don't understand it, Jazz. I mean, I get it's finite, but that's it, really. That's all I understand. Yeah. not for me.
That's yeah. Clear enough.
Cool. Anything else want to cover this week?
No. I mean, we always find heaps of stuff to talk about, and we thought this was a slow news week, but cool. Here we are.
God, there we go.
It was fascinating.
To our listeners, hope you guys enjoy the content. We'll see you guys next week with some more interesting stuff. And till then, play safe, stay safe. Cheers, Jazz, John, and David.